If you enjoy this podcast, and don't forget to subscribe to catch all future episodes. Also, check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/switchboxtv for video versions of this show, plus loads more videos covering sport, music, and lifestyle. That's youtube.com/switchboxtv. This episode was recorded in August 2020.
Everybody, welcome to the Need to Know Music Show with me, Ronan McManus. And today we are dipping our toe into the water of electronic music and film scores. And we welcome today Darren George Hill, also known as Rudy Tapper. How are you doing?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
I'm good. What do I call you?
Rudy. My friends call me Tapper.
Oh, okay. Well, so where do you get the name from?
Stole it from someone I used to work with, and they don't know that yet. They might find out one day.
It was their actual name.
It was their actual name. Yeah, I just thought it was a cool name. Wow. So I thought, I'm having that.
Excellent. Well, I'll call you Rudy then, if that's all right.
Please do.
So how's lockdown been treating you? How have you been coping with it and everything?
It's not too bad. I mean, I've got the kind of job where I can just work from home, so I'm kind of like, I just wake up, log on, do some work, and then that's it. And it's like, I've not, compared to a lot of people, I've not had that much of a problem with it, really. I mean,
how has it affected your music?
It's been awesome for that, mate. I mean, I've just done so much. I just can work, do 2-3 hours every day, just bam bam bam. It's great.
So you have a home studio set up there.
You can probably see it a little bit at the back. It's reasonably basic, but you know, I've got a reasonable setup. It'd get me through.
Yeah, I mean, you do some amazing things with from GarageBand at the moment. I'm doing demos on GarageBand.
GarageBand's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I don't use it myself.
But it's like, you know, the home studio setups are, you know, you can get such great recordings out of not a lot of layout, really, you know, as far as money and stuff.
I mean, it's even in the time that I've been doing it, it's improved massively. I mean, I started doing this maybe, about 10 years ago. And from 10 years ago to now, just what you can do is just incredible.
So you're making full use of it. But I'd like to take this back to the very beginning, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. And what first grabbed you? And with me, when I was a young sort of teen, when grunge kind of hit, Pearl Jam and Nirvana and all that kind of stuff. That was the first music that really sort of sucked me into wanting to do music as a job and wanting to throw myself into it. What was it for you?
I mean, given I was born more than a decade after the Beatles split up, it was actually the Beatles. My dad had like their sort of classic records, like Sgt. Pepper's and Revolver and stuff like that. And I just played those when I was about the same age, like sort of 16, 17. And they blew me away. And the quality of the songwriting was exceptional. And really, that's what got me hooked. And I'm still obsessed with the Beatles now. And I like a lot of other things, obviously. But yeah, it was the Beatles, even though it was well after my time.
It's funny because the stuff that I've heard of yours so far has been mostly the sort of film score and TV stuff. So how do you go from loving sort of Beatles, the songwriting and the sort of obviously a band kind of setup? How do you then transition that and get into kind of film scores? And how did that work?
So I think one of the things about the Beatles is that they had such a broad palette of sort of the way they did stuff. So they got, you know, they just use every chord available, so much stuff. So when I was a kid, like 17, 18, and I just started playing guitar, and I'm looking at a Beatles chord thing, and it's all these really weird chords, like, you know, C7-5 or whatever silly thing it is. And you have to learn that. But then in learning it, you kind of learn how to construct harmonies and stuff like that. And then it's then just a step to sort of just hearing these things in the ether and just teaching yourself how to play music, basically.
I mean, they really pushed the boundaries of pop into song arranging into, obviously, with George Martin's involvement and stuff, the more the string arrangements and the more instruments as the kind of studios got better. Then obviously they sort of pushed the boundaries of that. But was that kind of part of, were you hearing those songs and thinking, right, I can take this on and do my own thing with this in a much more kind of like traditionally film score way, or, you know, how was...
It's not quite as...
Or do you not see them as, maybe you don't see them as different, I don't know.
No, I think they're less different than they might superficially appear. I mean, yeah. I think that's the thing with music generally. I think it is all like the differences are much more superficial than actual in most cases. So if you know, for it, like, to take a fairly simple example, you know, if a minor key sounds quite moody and somber and, you know, like that, and that's going to translate across any piece of music, whereas something that's much more kind of, you know, major and consonant, it's just going to be much more uplifting. And that's just true whatever your genre. So that can be, you know, from anything from you know, sort of hip hop to a classical piece, the tonalities are going to align, because that's just what music is. It's just about like creating an emotion through a sequence of notes.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's, like, for me, I've always listened to more sort of singers and guitar based music, and it's interesting to take that sort of holistic approach to sort of say, right, I can hear, and you can adapt that into other genres. So how did you kind of get into the film score?
To be completely honest with you, it was slightly me just being a bit. I was a bit younger when I did this stuff, and I was maybe a bit arrogant, and I just thought, yeah, I can do that, that's fine. I'd really been more of a songwriter and just done kind of my own stuff, and then I to cut a long story short, I got offered voluntary redundancy and I took it, so I was able to take 2 years out. I thought, great, I'll do that time to do some composing. And I just put myself out there. I just took the commissions that were coming, and someone says, I want a classical piece, I was like, okay, I'll have a go at that. Someone wanted an incidental score, I'll have a go at that. And I was essentially bluffing a bit, but
instincts, I suppose. That you'd sort
use
of
your instincts, these, yeah.
These, and these you, music, you know, musical instincts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you built up these things, and you know what sounds dark, you know what sounds light, you know, you've got on these keyboards, on these computers, you've got so many different sounds. You can just play everything through the keyboard and it sound like a violin or it sound like a flute. And, you know, you can just do it. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but after a while you can just construct these things.
I did notice you got the chance to, on your show reel, you have got a chance to recreate the iconic Doctor Who theme tune. Yeah. I mean, what was that like? It must have been a little kid.
I absolutely love Doctor Who, and when I was a teenager, I was a complete obsessive, and, you know, I was in the Doctor Who Appreciation Society. I even wrote for the magazine once, you know, I was properly seriously Doctor Who. And when this came up, I bit the guy's hand off. I mean, it was a kind of fan thing. So it's this guy that he just bankrolled himself as Doctor Who in a fan thing. But it was actually pretty good. It was actually pretty decent. And yeah, I just did a version of the theme music, which was based on the sort of new series version, but I just made it a little bit more electronic. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Must be a real thrill.
It was.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So I see you're working on a new album, working on new material, which you've obviously been working on from your home studio. And how's that going? I see you're due for release at the end of the year. Are you on schedule? How are you finding working on it?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a massive learning curve because, I mean, the you know, these days, you know, the it's both, like you mentioned earlier, you know, you've got everything in the box and it's all available to you, which is great, and I'm certainly not knocking it, but what it does mean is that you have to do everything yourself. So whereas maybe 20, 30 years ago, the fact that I could write music might have stood for itself, now I have to write it and actually produce it, which is, it's a whole different skill set. So producing music, you know, all the things that are involved in it, mixing, EQing, compressing, like working out how to do reverb, all these sort of different components to it, which are all skill sets in themselves, I've had to just teach myself over the last couple of years, and it's been a big learning curve, but I kind of feel like I'm almost there with it now. So hopefully.
Well, I think this is what, I mean, this is something that I found with one of my things about music that I think sometimes having too much knowledge can actually, using your instincts a bit, can actually produce something more interesting. I found that I find when I revisit songs I'd written when I was 17 and didn't have a clue about chord progressions, I just played what I thought sounded good. There's something to those
things
where I'm not constrained by the kind of secret, you know, that certain chords follow other chords. And so I think with the I mean, someone must have discovered all this electronic stuff and gone through all the same processes you're going through. Maybe you'll bring it to a different place. It's all good, you know.
I agree with that.
I saw that on your influences, you'd put Beatles, as we discussed. Bowie, fair play.
Everyone likes Bowie.
Calvin Harris, obviously very successful, more modern.
Really good production values.
And then what I really found interesting was a Stock Aitken and Waldman reference
because
I mean, I'm of the age to remember, it was actually pre my grunge awakening. I was listening to a lot of chart music when I was a bit younger, and that mid 80s to late 80s time, they were an absolute hit factory. I mean, people, we wouldn't have Kylie Minogue. We wouldn't have, you know, look at kind of Rick Astley, Bananarama. I mean, and all the TV soap stars like Kylie and Jason, Donovan and various others, they were an absolute hit factory. And then a very distinctive sound. And I was interested to see whether it was the sound of the music that you are saying is an influence, or whether it's their impact in the industry and the kind of their success that you would like to emulate, or
it's not so much the success, it's more so there's two things, and I think they're quite unfairly maligned, although I can, so to say at the outset, I think a lot of their stuff is pretty naff and, you know, clearly doesn't stand the test of time. But there is a lot of stuff that is, I think, really, really good. I think they've got two things that are great. I think the first thing is just the actual song construction, like the dynamics in their songs, the way that the verses lead to the bridges, to the choruses, is just, the dynamics are great and they're uplifting, and it's the melodies are quite strong. And they have quite a strong range, like the Beatles. They use people wouldn't think it necessarily, but they use quite a diverse range of chord progressions and things like that. I think the other thing is, it's that linking of a strong melody to a poppy beat, which is the kind of thing that I like. I kind of like having a good tune, but then it being underlined by something that you can dance to. And I think, I feel like a lot of music's kind of gone in different directions. So you have your dance music and you have your pop, but you don't necessarily, the two don't often meet that much. But I think what Stock Aitken Waldman did was they essentially had music you can dance to that actually had a really nice tune. At their best, as I say, at their worst, they weren't very good. But I think there is a lot in their stuff that I really love. So, yeah.
Well, I think it's a valid point that, I mean, sort of music purists would sort of almost turn the nose up at it. But
yeah,
I know the production was that mid to late 80s sound, mainly. Yeah. And but I actually did a thing where I stripped back, I think it was a Taylor Dane song, and did an acoustic version of it.
Tell It to My Heart.
Tell It to My Heart. And it was a kind of, I did it as a Mickey take of the the John Lewis adverts. And I wanted to take, or what my idea was, I was going to take the most sort of plastic sort of pop song I could think of, and then do a really heartfelt version. What I realized is it's actually a really good song.
Yeah.
A lot of those songs are.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
yeah.
And you've sort of, and quite rightly, as you point out, the poppy, dancey beats, and there was and there was an element of the instant catchiness to it. But there was actually a proper song structure.
Yeah,
and
lots of
modulations to talk, you know, in more of a songwriting terms, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there were great songs, and you can't fault the amount of hits they had, and they wouldn't have those amount of hits if there weren't good songs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, they were talented people. They knew what they were doing. I'm sure they'll take it on the chin if people think their stuff's a bit naff, but, you know, you're right. I mean, I was thinking the other day, actually, there was another one that I thought could do with that sort of more somber treatment and would sound really great. But I've forgotten which one it was, unfortunately. So,
well,
if it comes here,
shout it out. But there are plenty of them, and you've actually seen, like, Rick Astley doing reworking of his stuff, and it stands up. I mean, it really does.
Yeah, he did that one with Foo Fighters, which was pretty awesome.
Yeah. It was like Smells Like Teen Spirit into Never Gonna Give You Up, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But I think they obviously did a lot of things, taking soap stars and kind of people who were already famous and giving them songs. And there was a certain amount of cynicalness to it. But Pete Warburton, obviously, people know from the Pop Idol stuff. And, you know, people forget Simon Cowell came through the Pete Warburton's ranks, and he came through that sort of so that there was a certain amount of opportunism, but it wouldn't have, without the talented production and all that. I mean, would that be something you'd be interested in getting into production and songwriting side of things?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm not particularly egotistical. I just want to get my stuff out there, and if it's out there through other people covering it, or I'm producing other people, I'm kind of be happy with that.
You sent through an advanced track from the new stuff, so thanks for that. And I've noticed it was obviously it's instrumental. Is all your stuff instrumental?
Most of it's not. Most of it's sort of songwriting based. But because I haven't recorded any of my vocals yet, I thought that was the one I'd share. I think that one's slightly more out there. A lot of my stuff's a bit more kind of quirky and accessible. But that one's meant to be the slightly more experimental one on the alpha.
Yeah. Okay. I was just wondering about, you know, like, have you ever done sort of collaborations and that kind of thing? Do you do that, or are you really concentrating on getting your own thing off the ground?
Yeah. I mean, I'm concentrating on getting my own thing, but I'm open to anything. You know, I'm open to, you know, anything anyone asks me to do, I will give a go. I mean, you know, that was when I was doing the composing. I was saying, right, I'm definitely going to do that. People come to me and say, do you want to do this? And I'm like, yeah, sure. So that's how I sort of take it. It's like, yeah, I just go with the flow to a large extent.
Great. And so do you see this being a live thing? You're going to take, would you like to bring this down to gigs? Because
I think
obviously
so.
Right now it's kind of you in a studio.
Yeah.
But could you see it developing into being a kind of some sort of band or a live act, or would you be?
Yeah.
How would you see that manifesting itself?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't thought through all the details completely, but yeah, I see myself performing on a stage. I've got some friends that can play instruments and stuff, and said they want to help. So yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sort of the longer term thing is that I'd go on stage and perform them. Yeah.
Excellent. And what are the plans for the release? So you're talking, I saw you said it was like end of this year, maybe start of 2021. Mm. Would you have plans to take it out and launch it properly?
I've got
plans for that.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I haven't really thought it through that much. I mean, I think the important thing for me is to just make the records and get that done. That's the kind of driving motivation for me. It's not so much like necessarily, you know, fame or just people coming to see me. I view that as something that I'd have to do if I wanted people to listen to it. But I'm kind of more about, I just want to be able to create records and do that for, you know, just for my job. So I'm sort of just, I haven't really thought that far ahead particularly, but I suppose there's lots of channels available to people to do this stuff. You know, like YouTube and iTunes and all sorts of different things. So, but
it's something that we're doing at Switchbox, a lot more of sort of, I think there's gonna be a lot more live streaming, I think, in the mm-hmm. business in general going forward.
Yeah.
Not instead of live gigging, but I think as well as an announcement of, mm-hmm. I think it's going to be something that has kind of appeared a lot more during lockdown that will be with us to stay, I think. But I mean, with the writing, I mean, is all the album done now, or are you kind of honing it as you go? Are you do you constantly write?
Well, I mean, I went through a period when I was a little bit younger where all I would ever do would be write songs and write music, and that was just my thing. That's just what I do. More recently, I've been much more about actually just trying to learn how to produce music properly, because I never really gave that any real thought, and I was just sort of just producing and writing stuff. And so I do more of that now. Occasionally, I'll get the occasional tune might come to me, but I think I'm probably reasonably unusual in that I've probably written all my stuff already, and then it's just now a case of me spending the next few years just producing it all and putting it out there. So I've got, you know,
I suppose you've got to kind of wear different hats, haven't you, really? Because you've got to kind of do the songwriting hat, and then once you've got the stuff, now you're thinking, okay, now I'm the producer man. And as you were saying before about having to wear all those different hats, so I suppose it kind of takes up your creative energy doing the other side of it, because people like Ryan Adams, he's just like constantly writing as he's recording an album, and he's like the songs, bunch of songs he starts with aren't necessarily the ones he finishes.
Oh, okay, right.
But of course, he's got other people doing those jobs that you're doing all of them, I suppose. Yeah. So I mean, what have been the biggest sort of biggest challenges you've faced so in your career, sort of as you've been going on?
Okay, so when I was a full-time composer, it was the lack of money. the pay is not very good. So I mean, there will obviously come a point, you know, as a composer where, you know, you'll get that gig that will pay you a lot of money, and then you're in, you're fine. But for me as a jobbing composer, I was finding it difficult to not difficult to get work, but difficult to get work that was sort of substantially well paid. And one of the challenges was kind of, you'd find yourself going for jobs and there'd be people with a lot more kind of like career history going for one. I mean, one thing I went for, and it wasn't particularly well paid, but one job I went for, a BAFTA winning composer was going for. Now, if I was the person advertising the job, I'd take the BAFTA winning composer, because why not? But it's a little bit, it was a little bit concerning that a BAFTA winning composer would have to go for a fairly poorly paid job, which kind of suggests that perhaps the number of people who wanted to do composing was perhaps outnumbering the demand. So I think that's probably the main reason that I kind of switched to just going to doing my own thing, and just, you know, this is what I want to do, this is how I want it to sound, and not doing stuff for other people, because you know, there's lots of other people doing that, there's lots of other people that can write music, there's lots of other people that can give, you know do that, so, but no one else can do my thing, because my thing's my thing. So that's why I kind of decided to just forget about money and just go for my own thing.
Was it quite a, almost like a relief making that decision, I suppose, was it?
It was, yeah, because it felt really right. It felt like the right thing to do. I spent, you know, 2-3 years just sort of chasing pieces of work and composing. And, you know, it's kind of, in a way, it's quite a good job because I look back at the things that I've done and I'm quite proud of a lot of it. But at the same time, you know, it wasn't enough to bring home the bacon and I had to get a regular job. So it's you know, you're getting a bit philosophical here, but you only get one shot at life. So it's either I spend my whole time trying to just do that, or I just do my own thing, which I want to really do. So I'll spend my time doing that. And if it comes off, then great. And if it doesn't, fine. But it's sort of what I wanted to do. So,
yeah, I mean, I could definitely empathize with that because I've been going through a similar thing because at the moment, before lockdown happened, I was a gigging covers musician in pubs and everything, as well as my own stuff has always been going on under the surface, but I've never been able to make a career out of it. Mm. And once lockdown's happened, they've closed all the pubs, all the venues, and all the functions are gone. And I'm like, okay, but you know, I've now got a chance to make my own thing, my main thing, and try to give that a shot. And it was kind of, some ways, there was a panic, sort of, there's no gigs, there's no money coming in. And then I thought, actually, this decision has been taken out of my hands, and I can now the relief of being able to say, right, I make my own thing, my main thing, and it's really, you know, really freeing to be able to put all my energies into that.
And
you must have the same sort of thing now. You can just immerse yourself in your music in the studio and everything.
It's lovely. You know, there's nothing worse for creativity than having to do a regular office job. I try my best while I was, I still am, but I'm working at home. But it's the commute that does it. So having to have 1 hour there, 1 hour back, it's something really tiring about commuting, and it makes it hard. It's been great for that, actually.
Yeah. So what's your highlight of your career? What would you say is the highlight of your career?
That's a good question. I mean, I think sort of professionally, I scored a film, which was put out on YouTube as a kind of web series, Gabriel Cushing versus Zombie Vampires, it was a very, very low budget horror film, but I was very, very proud of the work that I did on it. It was three months of my life. I scored the whole thing from start to finish, feature length. And, you know, I put so much work into it, and, you know, I don't want to criticize the production too much because I absolutely loved it, but it was done on the cheap. I'm really proud of my score for that. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Must be really rewarding to hear that and see it.
Being a part of that.
It's almost different to, I'm used to recording albums and people listen to the album, but to have something that collaborates with someone else's piece of art and seeing out that come together must be really satisfying.
It is when, you know, so the director who I obviously built up quite a good relationship with, he really liked my stuff, and the more we worked together, so I'd essentially do a scene, send in the scene, we talk about it, and the more it went on, the more he'd sort of trust my instincts, the more he'd kind of just accept my ideas and more give me more freedom to kind of be a bit bold in what I did. It was a great time. That was a really great time. I loved doing that.
Fantastic. So what's the overarching ambition? Where would you like to be sort of 10-20 years or whatever? Where are you aiming for?
So, I mean, I think, you know, what I would really, really like would be just for a lot of people to like my music and, you know, I don't necessarily want to be famous, but what I would quite like is for a lot of people to want to pay me some money to listen to
make
my
it
music.
A job, I suppose.
To make it's it like, a job, I mean, this is, right?
Yeah, you know, to, yeah, I'm to, in the to just, that.
You know, enough people in the world paying me that I can do this and not have to do anything else. I think that's my ambition. I mean, I, you know, I kind of
I think it's one of the major issues facing artists writing their own music is finding your audience is the biggest challenge because in the past you'd have had sort of Top of the Pops or even to actually have a record in a shop back in the day before streaming and digital stuff. So there's a certain kind of validation of that by the fact that someone's an audience member will know that that person has got enough about them for this somebody to pay for their album to be made and produced, put in a shop. There's a certain kind of filter that brings you, and if you hear on the radio or you know on TV, there's a filter now because a lot of people can produce their own music. It's finding your audience is the hardest thing for an audience finding music they like.
Yeah,
it's really tough. I think it's one of the toughest things that faces an independent musician right now. I mean, what are you doing? What's your thoughts on that as far as, you know, using Spotify or that kind of stuff or whatever you might listen? How do you feel is the best way in your opinion?
I mean, I don't necessarily know because I've been focusing on sort of just doing it. Doing the music, but I mean, my sense is that Spotify is just like this ocean where you put something in, it's like a drop in the ocean, and how on earth do you get it noticed? I mean, I was sort of thinking that what I might do would be send stuff to radio shows and things like that, and in the hope that they might play it and then people pick it up from then. I mean, I don't know what do you think about that? I mean, I don't.
Well, I think Bandcamp's a great resource for that. Just to say about the radio thing, BBC Introducing are great with that. I mean, you can upload stuff to your local BBC BBC Introducing, and then it kind of gets passed on and possibly played on their main podcast.
Right.
That is a good way of doing things. But Bandcamp's a great independent musician resource where people are actively seeking out independent music, and you can get categorized into your own genre and stuff. So that's a really good thing for people to use. And me and my band, we've started to use that a lot more.
Okay.
And the more you engage in there, and the people can sort of become fans of you, and you become fans of them, and it's kind of its own little social network within itself, and you get really good percentages from there. They don't take much money off you, so it's really good for actually making some money from it. And people, people can pay more if they want to. So you can give them the option to pay more than the price, which is quite a good idea because some people want to support you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Well, this is the Need to Know Music Show. So we like to. So the idea is that we're recommending to our viewers, to people like yourself. But do you have a recommendation of somebody that maybe people may not be aware of? Who would you put forward into that category?
Someone current.
I mean, anybody that you think maybe people should know, or just even a piece of music that you just particularly find that it would be a really good thing for people to discover.
Oh dear, put me on the spot now. God. Well, okay. This is the answer my brain's just given me. I don't know that it's any good.
We're all slaves to our brains.
One of the most beautiful songs I think has ever been written, and it never ever comes up. One of the most beautiful songs that's ever been written is Another Day by the Ruttles. Now, the Ruttles aren't current. No, I get that. But that song, Another Day, is absolutely lovely. And it's that song just has to go mental at some point. Someone has to do a cover version of it and have it at number one for 10 weeks because it's such a great song.
Well, Ruttles were, it was, that was Neil Innes. And his, it was a, for those that don't know, it was a kind of a Beatles parody, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the songs are all original songs, but they're almost bits of Beatles songs, aren't they? But they're actually fantastic songs in their own right.
Yeah. Some of them are just brilliant. Yeah.
I mean, it's actually the genius of taking something, and it's almost a lot of things, but none of them at the same time. And it's like, I mean, Neil Innes was just such a genius.
He's quite underrated.
And it had the, it was obviously Bonzo Dog Doodah Band is his creation as well. But he had Eric Idle and some of the other Python guys in the Ruttles. It's an amazing album, actually. I listen to it often. And it just makes you chuckle, some of the stuff. The arrangements and the songwriting in it is just brilliant.
Some of them are absolutely great.
And I think that's a perfect example of what the Need to Know Music Show is all about. It's people find discovering stuff that they need to know.
They need to know that Another Day by...
Another Day by the Ruttles.
Is a great song.
Fantastic. All right, well, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Darren Rudy Tapper. And thank you very much for joining us, and good luck with everything you're doing.
Oh, good luck to you too.
Thank you very much, and thanks for joining us. So, yes,
welcome.
If you'd like to know more about this, people like Rudy Tapper, and there'll be a lot more people on this series, then comment, like, subscribe, and follow everything that we're doing. And all the links to all Rudy's music will be in the description below. So feel free to click that to learn more and join in the journey, because as we've discovered, it's kind of, there's plenty more to hear from Rudy here. So, all right, thanks very much.
And cheers, Ronan.
All right, take care.
You take care, mate.